Last year, the first series of RTE Radio 1's Comedy Showhouse, funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland, featured a host of top-class Irish talent, including Cork-born performer and best-selling author Colm O'Regan. His first show, Colm O'Regan Wants a Word, in private, won the 2016 PPI Award for Best Radio Comedy. Now sit back and enjoy a brand new episode, Colm O'Regan Wants a Worldwide Word, produced by Sideline Productions in association with comedy website Grintage.com. The show was first recorded in front of a live audience at the Sugar Club in Dublin for RTE Radio 1.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Colm O'Regan Wants a Word. Thank you very much. This time, it's Colm O'Regan Wants a Worldwide Word, a perambulation through online communication. I'm Colm O'Regan, and joining me on this trip down 16 gigabytes of memory lane are comedians and actors Paul Tylak.
Hello.
And Tara Flynn.
Hello.
Ah, the internet. Do you remember what it was supposed to be? The information superhighway that we all journeyed down together, heading towards a brighter future. But somewhere along that highway, the information superhighway has gone down to one lane due to millions of minor traffic incidents and millions of others rubbernecking.
Another day, another Twitter tirade.
Twitter feud.
Online spat.
Twitter tirade.
A Twitter war.
It's all the arguing. Now, there's nothing wrong with argument and debate, but a lot of it has degenerated to the extent that if it took place in a schoolyard, we'd all be sent home with notes to our parents in our homework journals. Also joining me to help make sense of the new rules and no rules of online communication is Professor of Linguistics and Director of the Centre for English Language Learning and Teaching at Trinity College Dublin, Dr. Sarah O'Brien. Sarah, how long are you a linguist?
10 years. I started by looking at essentially migrant groups and examining how they spoke, and I look a lot at what happens to your language when you immigrate and the new country doesn't support your language anymore, and so I became very interested in dialect and the relationship between language and identity, especially for immigrants. So
very
yeah,
good.
It's been going on now for 10 years.
Kind of the experience, say, of a Cork person coming to Dublin.
Yeah, exactly. That.
We really are put upon.
Yes, yeah. The struggle is real. Okay, so a lot of what we read on the internet is generated by media organisations. The internet has changed how we consume the media, and with that also the language that the media themselves use in order to attract our attention has also changed. Our attention spans are so short, they need to attract us quickly. Now, previously the mainstream media would each have had their own style. So, for example, headlines in the Irish Times.
Hey, did you go to Trinity? Here's an article about people like you.
Or
generation emigration. Ireland is so small-minded and backwards. I'm in Abu Dhabi and I have a servant.
The Irish Independent.
Something something Abraham Huberman, something something Catherine Thomas, something something.
The Sunday World.
Gangland crime. Ah, they're outside. They're out in the hen house. Be afraid. They'll ride your livestock.
The Daily Mail.
Here's a really long headline about a woman and she should be ashamed of herself. And next to it, here's a picture of a 17-year-old girl in a bikini for you to perv over because she's just about old enough.
And the Irish Examiner.
Don't you write for the Irish Examiner, though?
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, so that'd be something like a very good headline and a very well-researched article.
Dead right. But these headlines have been joined by a new style, one that's online and deliberately addictive. It presses the pressure points in your human flaws just to get you to click on the link. If you don't know clickbait, here's a handy guide to some of the clickbait you may come across.
This man drops a wallet, and what happens next will restore your faith in humanity.
A, I don't need any faith restoring in humanity, and B, what happens next is always expected. The homeless guy gives back the wallet, the old man can play football surprisingly well, the woman does a jiu-jitsu move on the man, and it's all fake, some sort of stupid social experiment. Don't click, please. Next.
You won't believe this sports person's hilarious reply to something that was said to him. Ha ha, banter.
Next.
This right-wing person just got owned on Twitter by this three-year-old or left-wing person. Ha ha, this will change everything now, I'd say.
Other clickbait appeals to our hatred for those who do better than us.
You won't believe what that actress looks like now. Absolute state.
Or the one that makes us think we're smarter than everyone else.
Only 2% of people get this tricky maths thingy.
And then it turns out everyone gets it. Everyone is as smart as you, or as stupid. Clickbait, just stop it. Every time you click this stuff, it's a tiny little disappointment. Just like eating a meringue. And don't tell me meringue isn't disappointing. Every single time, it's the clickbait of desserts. I think we need a clickbait enema, special re-education. You need to click on headlines that don't disappoint you. Something like...
The Farmer's Journal. Hogget prices up 10 cents a kilo.
There's no sensationalising. Here is the headline. Click if you want, or go way out of it and don't be annoying me, you townie with the soft hands on you. Or the Ireland's Own.
Don Conroy talks about his colourful life, his conservation work, and his time as RTE's resident drawing expert.
For those at home, Paul is holding the Ireland's Own Harvest Edition from last year, and on the cover, Don Conroy, Ireland's favourite drawer, is holding, you guessed it, an owl.
Woohoo! Just did an owl there.
Yeah, it's very wise of you. Sarah, what does online do to communication? How does the concept of communicating online change how we word things?
Well, I can give you a good example. One of the modules I coordinate in college is called Aspects of Written Language. And previously we would have studied hieroglyphics or the evolvement of kanji Japanese symbols. And now we study YouTube comments and Facebook pages because it gives us this whole archive of language use that was previously inaccessible. Really, the big change is you're taking... There's a sort of formal style of speech and a formal style of writing, and there are rules for both. And the internet is kind of... slap them together. And so that's really what we're looking at. How are the rules around how we communicate orally and through writing, how are they changing and how are they merging?
Very good. So, I'm a columnist.
So you hate yourself. That's the word for someone who hates columns.
That's true, actually, yeah. So I do have a sense of self-loathing. But anyway, as a columnist, here's a secret. Sometimes some of us run out of things to say. So we comment on whatever comes into our heads. Before, this wasn't a problem because it was newspapers and there was a finite amount of space and there used to be a thing called journalism. But now, the internet is infinite and columnists are cheaper than journalists, so there's loads of work for us to be talking through our holes about whatever happens. Just to get the conversation going. We like to, you know, get the clicks going. And what happens is one thing will happen and it will lead to an endless cycle of comment and rebuttal and reply. Here's a sample of the column cycle. A bad thing happened to Paul. Each new column lands with a bing.
A bad thing happened to me.
Here's a column about the bad thing that happened that guy.
What this bad thing that happened that guy says about Ireland today. I get the Late Late Show because of the bad thing.
So, how bad was the bad thing that happened?
and I cry and it goes viral.
All seems to be going well, but then up steps...
Hi, I'm a brave columnist. I'm not afraid to write against the prevailing opinion, whether I believe it or not, because I don't believe in anything. I just need to get clicks. I'll start off by understanding what happened to that guy, but actually, I'll be using words like easily offended, snowflake, and this generation. I'll say things like, there was a time when, and then I'll end with a rhetorical question about what would our parents have done.
There then follows a backlash against brave columnist. They apologise, if they have offended anyone. There is a panel discussion on part 7 of The Late Late Show the following week, after the man who's lost a load of weight and the woman who is doing a new home improvement show. The panel lasts 10 minutes at 12:45, featuring brave columnist, someone else who's always on these things, and another person who's a total head the ball, but is brought on because of, you know, balance. After that, a gobshite enters the fray.
Hi, I'm a gobshite, and you'll get what's coming to you, columnist.
Then a serious journalist writes something.
Hi, I'm a serious journalist. I have dinner parties that we have discussions at, not like ye with your house parties. No cans. And if there's beer, it's in brown bottles brewed by boys with beards.
Serious journalist does a measured piece about what does the debate around the thing that happened say about debate in Ireland today. They'll say on the one hand, and then the other hand. They'll finish with, but one thing's for certain, before going on to state the bleeding obvious. 1 year later, someone who's stuck for a column...
Hi, I'm stuck for a column. I know. I'll write a column entitled, 1 year has passed and what's changed?
2 years later, a young journalist who mainly writes lists...
Hi, I'm a young journalist. Oh, sorry, someone just WhatsApped me there. Anyway, where was I?
The young journalist will mention the thing in a column entitled...
10 ways in which 2017 literally was like your life.
And that's what online has done to the media today. People in the audience already shifting at listening to that. That was more than words. There's nothing more beautiful than the moment when a member of a certain generation discovers emojis on their smartphones for the first time. It's always nice to get a text with a building or a rocket from your nan. But where are we going next with emojis? It could be, for example, in the future, a nightmare if you are reading the news on the radio.
And a recap on our top story tonight. In a further escalation of transatlantic tensions, US President Ivanka Trump has sent a strongly emojied tweet to British Prime Minister Katie Hopkins, in which she reiterated America's position that... rocket, ship, gun, mushroom cloud, angry face, chicken, that monkey with its hands over its ears, ladybird, although the White House later confirmed the ladybird was a typo. And now, the weather.
Starting off, sunshine, happy face with cloud, sad face later.
Sarah, emojis. Like, it feels like it's coming back to... hieroglyphics. Would emojis signal the end of language fundamentally? Like, do we revert to pictures and then that's it?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. And hieroglyphics had a very complex sort of system that founded it. And so, no,
I was going for a cheap point there.
Okay,
sorry.
I wasn't trying to diminish your point.
And you came in with your facts. remember the briefing.
Don't make Colin look bad. Okay, yeah. Sorry.
We all had that one. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I don't think emojis will take over sort of our modes of communication, because, I mean, our human biology is wired toward verbal and even nonverbal communication. So we've got a throat and a larynx, and our mouths are sort of biologically evolved to produce language. So it doesn't really make sense that we'd use rockets and smiley faces and ladybirds to compensate for our kind of natural verbal and even nonverbal language use, gestures and so on. So I think we're safe, but it's definitely not going to develop our literacy rates. No.
Very good. I have a question. Who here has made a will? It's the most grown-up thing you can do apart from picking out your grave. By the way, who here has a grave? Just yourselves. Just yourselves. Just the two of you.
I did have one, but then I bet it in a game of cards. I don't know what happened, I just lost the plot. Sorry. Ooh.
Really torn about including that in the final edit. I can see good and bad on both sides with that. When I was getting my will done, I was asked the question, what's happening to your social media accounts after you go? And have people here thought about that? Who is getting your social media accounts when the time comes? One thing's for certain, the reading of the will is going to change.
Hello, folks. I'm just Michael's solicitor, so I'll read his last will and testament now. This is the last will and testament of Michael McGarrigle. After payment of all my just debts, dues, funeral and testamentary expenses, I give, devise, bequeath...
Get on with it.
...and nominate and appoint all of my property...
These lads are paid by the word, you know.
That's ridiculous. Excuse me. At which, if I may die, seized, possessed of, unto my wife, Mary... for her own use and benefit absolutely.
Woohoo! I mean, oh, I'm sorry, he was a great man.
I leave my social media accounts to my children because Mary says she's hopeless at that kind of thing.
I am, in fairness.
To my son Paul, I leave my Twitter account at MichaelMcGarrigle4278. Which has 8 followers and a profile picture of the Liverpool Football Club crest. You are to use it primarily to question the tactics of sports managers based on your own lack of experience.
It's what he would have wanted. I'm coming for you, Jurgen Klopp, hashtag waste of space.
To my daughter, Anya, I leave my Facebook account on the proviso that it be continued to be used to share fake competitions to win an iPhone, misleading photographs claiming to be of Syrian refugees when actually it was a different type of brown person, and heartwarming updates about what it means to be a granddad.
Yeah, thanks, Dad.
And to my youngest son, Ryan, I leave my secret anonymous online account that I use for commenting underneath newspaper articles and saying things like, oh, the PC brigade won't like this, and white males are actually now the persecuted minority.
Oh, great. That's 2 of those accounts I have to maintain now.
He's offline now, thank God. Sarah, we're leaving so much stuff after us. Is it exciting from a linguistic point of view, all of this record that's going to live on of the ordinary people?
Yeah, it is. It is very exciting. We've got a sort of an unprecedented archive of language that is very public and that's accessible to all of us. So as a linguist, it's exciting. I think there are 2 main advantages. First is that it represents language use from such a broad social spectrum. So previously we were reliant on newspapers and kind of the voices of the big heroes of history, you know. And the other advantage is that it's constantly being updated daily. So we, as a linguist, we're really interested in how language changes over time and sort of the variants that come about. And so we can track that almost on a day-to-day basis. So that is very exciting. Yeah, it's good news for linguists.
Earlier on, we asked our audience, have you done anything you regret online.
So probably liking a photo that you shouldn't be looking at just through a slip of the finger on your phone.
So I signed up to an internet dating site one time and ended up here now with this one over here.
What?
I regret being caught looking up porn by my younger brother.
And on a notice board in County Meath, I put up a Facebook post saying that I was delighted to see that they had put up signs with pictures of restricted breeds, and it went slightly viral. I can prove it here. I know you can't do it on radio, but I can prove it just to show you. 43,397,704 have viewed it, yeah.
So there is such a thing as bad publicity. I remembered that. Where's the guy who hates dogs? He's waving at the back here. It's good to have those kind of numbers, though. At least you've done something with your life, unlike the rest of us. Have you done anything you regret online?
No.
We all stand over everything we've ever done online.
Maybe I'm being overly negative. I've been moaning about the online influence on the way we speak, but actually it's not all that bad. I think there's one area that online has been good for, what I call the cultural revival. That's cultural revival. You cannot move now for internet discussion about aren't we fierce Irish all the same and look at the mad things we do down the country. I really like it, although I find some of it a little lazy.
Ha ha, what this Irish mammy does when confronted by something unfamiliar. Ha ha, please make this go viral, please.
Or it reflects on things that are not actually specific to a location.
145 ways you know you're from Longford. Number one, you have ears.
But it does act as an archive of the past.
It didn't do you a bit of harm. 13 ways health and safety has ruined childhood while reducing child mortality.
So, we're all fighting each other on the internet. And I find it hard to believe that all of those people arguing online actually hate each other as human beings that much. There must be some common ground. Sarah, is it dehumanising us? Is it making us, just giving us bad manners when we're talking?
There's a sense of temporality about writing a post online. I mean, if you're looking at a clip and there's 350,000 comments, you know that even if you write something, after a day, that comment is going to be way down the page. And so there isn't a sense of ownership or sort of culpability around writing. So I think it's a little bit like waving abuse at somebody as you speed past them in a car down a motorway and you'll never see them again. That's kind of the internet, you know, and even if you have a username, you can sort of cancel your account and create a new one tomorrow. So there's a lot of anonymity, and that makes us cheekier. So that's the big difference with the internet. We're very, very mobile, and we're very invisible in a way, and we have this kind of a fake persona, so we can be rude and cheeky and lewd in ways that maybe we couldn't have been before, you know?
There's so much rowing now between left and right, progressive and conservative, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, Fine Gael and Fine Gael. Often in these arguments, there are logical fallacies. It's good to spot them so that you know the other person is talking rubbish. For example, the middle ground fallacy. It says that if you have two views that are different, the right view might be halfway between the two views and you should compromise. Paul and Tara will now demonstrate why that might not be such a good idea.
I like to swim.
I can't swim. I need to stay on the beach.
I don't like the beach and I don't want to be on the beach. I prefer to swim out here where the water is 20 foot deep.
I would actually and literally, literally die there.
Well, I think it's only reasonable that you guys meet halfway.
I guess I can live with that.
Yeah, but the water's still 10 feet deep there and I would still die.
Yeah, but I've compromised.
You're not going to win every argument, Paul.
Okay.
And Paul drowns. So, another one is ad hominem. It means against the person. This is where you ignore the other person's argument and just insult them.
Look, all I'm saying is I don't think we can have unlimited immigration.
Racist.
If I could just ask a question about, you know, the way that women are always...
If you even have to ask, you're a misogynist.
I think it's great to help the homeless and all. I'd just be concerned that it...
What have you done to help the homeless and you sitting there in your grand couch?
Another favourite is the slippery slope. The slippery slope fallacy is where a person asserts that some event must inevitably follow from another. So, for example...
I think that it would be the decent and nice thing to do that people who have genders and sexualities that are different should have their human rights accommodated and it doesn't impact at all the existing rights of others.
Or should the floodgates all open then? What's to stop me marrying this spoon?
Or
could we not take in at least some refugees and save lives?
Oh yeah, and I suppose the next thing is we'll have a mosque in the sitting room, will we? And we'll all have to face Mecca at a hurling match.
Or what about this?
Oh, no, Donald Trump's been elected.
Oh, quick, get in the tinned food. We're going to have World War III. Where are the fecking iodine tablets? Where are the iodine tablets?
Actually, wait, that could happen. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to Colm O'Regan Wants a Worldwide Word with Paul Tylak and Tara Flynn, and our special guest, linguist and director of the Centre for English Language Learning and Training, Dr. Sarah O'Brien.
Colm O'Regan Wants a Worldwide Word was part of the new series of Comedy Showhouse, an independent radio production from Sideline Productions and funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with a television licence fee. The show was written and presented by Colm O'Regan, produced and edited by Owen Sweeney. Sound supervision was by Andrew Kane, and the series producer of Comedy Showhouse is Billy McGrath. You can look forward to a new episode of Colm O'Regan Wants a Word on Bank Holiday Monday, June 5th, after the 1 o'clock news. And if you're a live comedy fan, there will be 6 more nights of Comedy Showhouse featuring over 30 Irish comedy writers and performers, including Colm O'Regan, Deirdre O'Kane, Sean Hughes, Barry Murphy and Catherine Lynch. The shows will be staged live at the Projects Arts Centre in Dublin from May 29th to Saturday, June 3rd. For more information, see grintage.com. That's grintage.com. And you can book seats at projectartscentre.ie. All shows will be broadcast during 2017 on RTE Radio 1.